intro music is Quincy. Quincy goes by, what do you go by on Spotify?
Quincy Forte.
Quincy Forte. Where does that come from?
That's actually my real middle name. I was named after my dad's best friend, and then his son's name was Forte.
Okay. Yeah, so I didn't realize Quincy was a musician until after he started, and I heard his music and it was fantastic. And then I was like, okay, we should use that for the intro to the show. But today's topic is how to hire a demand gen leader. And so Quincy wanted to talk about this, and I was more than happy to, because I see mistakes happen all the time. There's so many different disciplines within marketing, like creative, product marketing, demand gen, other variations off of that, consumer insights, depending on how big or how small your company is, there's different names for it. And so I think it causes a lot of confusion, and it's really challenging to figure out who to hire. And we get this all the time when we're working with companies. Who should we be hiring? Who should we look at? And yeah, I just wanted to hear a little bit from you, Quincy, of why you wanted to talk about this today.
Yeah, so for me, I feel that I'm being empathetic to kind of our audience, right? Like, because right now, everybody's in the planning phase. People may have heard that they need a demand gen person. They don't know why. They don't know what exactly that demand gen thing is that they're hiring for, right? And so, like, I feel like it's important that, like, we help people out and kind of upfront questions to kind of be thinking about as they're looking for these demand gen roles to fill. And a lot of them are executive level, so that they can build out a team and grow this whole top of funnel type pipeline.
Yeah, or I hear a lot of times early on, and I think this is smart. I don't have the perfect formula for what stage to bring on demand gen, but a lot of times early stage, a company $1 million to $5 million in revenue is looking to hire their first VP of marketing, or sometimes it's their third at that point.
Yeah,
they're looking to start afresh and hire a VP of marketing. They already have revenue in the door. They have some semblance of product market fit, and they come to us and they say, we want to hire a VP of marketing with a demand generation background. What should we be looking for? And I think that's smart. What I want to caution people against is doing that before $1 million in revenue, or even like when you hire demand gen too early, I think it can drive your company in the wrong direction. I think it's really important to get positioning and product market fit and understand the customer early on. And so I think that product marketing hire is better suited than like a director type role. But yeah, so I have a couple of frameworks for this, Quincy. You'll be happy to know. The first is, and I think I've mentioned it on this before, the article 5 Ways to Build a $100 Million Company.
Yeah.
Have I showed that to you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is Christoph Jahns, European investor. He invested in Zendesk, I think Clio, other ones, maybe like Toggle. He's fantastic. All of his writing is good. All of his writing is great. But he basically breaks down how to build a $100 million company for B2B SaaS by breaking it into 5 categories. He has fleas, mice, rabbit, deer, and elephant. Elephant would be like really big deals, like over $100,000, over $1 million deals. Deer are like $10,000 deals. I forget how it breaks out exactly, but go read the article. And I think what's really interesting there is when you're thinking about demand gen, there are basically, I would put the same grouping on the type of demand gen folks who you're looking to hire. Whereas creative folks can tell a story for a $100 million sale, they can tell a story for a $1 sale. Product marketing, same way. You can kind of learn maybe a little bit more dependent on ACV, but with demand generation, when you're bringing someone in, the strategies that they've executed before are really important. And so I think it's important to think about the ACV, because that's oftentimes dictating directly, indirectly, the types of channels you're going to go after. So if you're looking for someone who's been able to scale up a company using paid media and content as the primary drivers, that's gonna dictate the type of demand gen person you're bringing on. If you want someone who has more experience selling $100,000 deals, it totally changes what their relationship was like with the sales team previously.
Yep.
And it also dictates the strategies and channels that they've worked in before.
So below a certain threshold, what I think I heard you say is that it's about painting the picture, telling the story, more like the I don't want to say intangible, but like that the setup, right? It's about the base. And then once you get to a certain benchmark, then it's about scaling faster, growing revenue further down the funnel, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And so keep going with that.
Yeah, no, that's kind of what I was thinking. Like I feel that it's crucial to break this up into two different points, right? Because if you're an organization and it's easy for you to kind of then now push back to see where you are like with hiring. Like if you are a CMO and you're like, hey, like the CEO is coming to you and say, hey, we need to hire this demand gen thing, because that's the thing that's out there. And like, that's what I'm hearing. Yeah. And like, again, I want to check that box. You want to make sure that you're armed with the right information to go back to be like, hey, we're not there yet. Like you can point to some evidence based on the numbers that you have and say, hey, we really need to focus on kind of building that base before we get to that demand gen part to grow the business.
Right. Yeah. So that early on when you're trying to find product market fit, I'm trying to think of other examples where demand gen kind of comes in later. I think enterprise marketing, sometimes when you have a really heavy sales motion. So like if you're selling $100,000+ deals, a lot of times marketing plays more of a support role in helping identify the right leads that you should go after. Working with the sales team to figure out which leads to follow up with and when. But the marketing team is more, I've always been kind of in that selling deals of $5,000 to $100,000. So I always call the $100,000+ more of a sales support role.
Yeah.
Where you're really providing them with sales enablement material. Product marketing is critical at that role to be able to hear the customer and build the materials for that. But when you're building out demand gen for a company with like a $10,000 ACV, or like a couple of years ago, the startups, SaaS startups that were coming up were usually starting out with like a $5,000 ACV. Yeah. Some would figure out distribution at that small business market and be able to just keep going. Other ones would slowly move up market to 10,000, then 20,000, then $50,000 deals. But yeah, so I wrote down a couple of questions that I thought would be pretty impactful, pretty useful for companies who are looking to hire this demand gen role. I actually wrote it, I wrote these down February 28th, 2019. And I still think they make a lot of sense. And I don't mean to pat myself on the back. I probably got these from someone else. But I still think these apply.
Before you get to the questions, I want to kind of delineate, is there an industry or product or B2B versus B2C where demand gen just doesn't make sense? Or is it applicable across all types of businesses, verticals, and depending on your target audience?
Yeah, so I think it depends on how you define demand gen. Mm. But I think it's not important. It's less important until later with yep. companies with a higher deal size. And then there are also companies that I talk to that are really heavy on channel and partnerships.
Yeah.
And so I think, again, you're more enabling other companies to sell your product versus selling your own. But it's rare.
Yeah.
It's rare. I think, you know, I have some people who I know who are in the back of my head saying, hey, even if it's channel, you want to be building demand with those channel partners. You want to be out there getting your name out there for to make it easier for those channel partners to sell your products in. But there are some cases where, you know, I don't think it's necessary. And then I think bringing demand in too early into a company can really cause you to drive, like the average demand gen person will pay less attention to the qualitative data that comes in from talking to a customer and more attention to the web analytics data. Mm. And I think that can really throw off how well you segment your market and kind of go after certain folks. So I think demand gen, whether it's ABM outbound, whether it's inbound, whether it's super high volume traditional media play, some of these places where they're not always calling it demand gen, I still think like that function of being able to go out and get leads is needed at pretty much every company out there. It just is less important for some than it is and more critical for others. Like HubSpot wouldn't be where it was today if it weren't for demand gen. Zendesk, same thing, and the list of companies go on. And the other thing I'll say is we are seeing more, especially over the last couple of years with COVID, we're seeing more adoption of companies that were not researching new products through the types of channels that we've seen recently. Like the ACV that you can go out and get someone on SEO, like through the SEO channel, is much higher now. Like there's more people researching on LinkedIn, on Google, on G2 Crowd, Capterra. Like the average deal size coming in from those channels is going up over time. And so I think that is because typically we are seeing consumers kind of lead the way in terms of how they adopt technology, then SMBs, and then the bigger companies are starting to change the way they do it, where they're, you know, maybe paying a little bit less attention to Forrester and Gartner and a little bit more proactive in doing their own research. We've also seen end users of products start to do more of the research, have a bigger say at the table. IT is more broken out as a function into each organization these days. And so the buying behavior has changed.
I think we can ride that wave out, especially seeing we don't know where the end is for the digital growth and the pandemic and all that stuff. Like we're probably going to see that continue to ride out for at least another 5 to 6 years as far as like residual, right? Or maybe increase.
Yeah, I think so. And we're also seeing a lot of people talk about community. So if you look at the past, a lot of companies were making buying decisions by talking to consultants, by, you know, kind of maybe they had a network, but it was really tough for us to understand where that network was or how they were getting connected to that network. And these days, a lot of that's happened on Slack, Discord, Facebook groups,
Clubhouse.
Clubhouse. Yeah. So a lot of this information is coming in from all over the place. And it's not necessarily one company that's the gatekeeper to the information. It's more of a crowdsourced community effort where they'll pop into one of the groups, ask a question and get a million responses from people and you know, maybe jump on a call and go deeper on those people's experience.
I think we have to go deeper into that dark funnel like later on a different episode.
Yeah, I'm getting sidetracked.
Let's ask.
Paulo has edited, like, we're gonna have to edit this episode a little bit because I've gone all over the place.
It's all good. So let's get to your questions. What are the questions that people should be asking when they're either thinking about bringing in demand gen, asking of themselves, but then asking of people they're evaluating?
Yeah. So what questions are they asking the person they're interviewing for demand generation?
Exactly.
So, all right. So here's my list. I have, what is the average deal size and how has that impacted your strategy? So for that question, I'm asking, basically breaking down that five ways to build a $100 million company to understand what they're doing. And then I want to understand the awareness they have about how that ACV impacts their strategy.
So, and here you're not looking for what is considered, I guess, glory metrics. You're not looking to get down in the weeds as far as like, this is what I did in like Google Ads or PPC, or this is what I did like toggling switches. You're looking for the strategic answer, right, to their process to get their growth, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I want to hear what their answer is, how they think about it. Because you see it probably more with smaller companies, because bigger companies, like, or people targeting the enterprise, they kind of take the sales process for granted, where this is just my opinion. Whereas with smaller companies, they're like, we have to close a deal in 7 days. So the interaction, or like when they have $1,000 deal size, if they have a sales team involved in the process, or $5,000 deal size, like the time to close becomes really important, because otherwise it can become incredibly inefficient for the sales team to be having to follow up with so many leads and spending so much time on each of those leads. The next one I think is how would you think about building a lead qualification model for our company? And I like that because I want to understand the types of leads that they think they're going to be sending to our sales team and how they think about that lead qualification. And I think even better, like, all following that question with how do you do it currently at your company?
Yes.
It's really easy to say, well, here's how I would do it. it puts them on the hot seat a little bit more to ask them how they're currently doing it. Marketers like to kind of, you know, talk a big game.
What do you mean? We talking impressions versus clicks, right?
Yeah. Oh, I'm all about pipeline. And then you like kind of talk with them and they're like, we ran this great campaign, it drove a ton of sessions. And then next one is, and it's related, I think the lead qualification, and then what is your current relationship like with your sales organization? I think those three, those two questions paired together are really powerful, because it's going to depend. Again, if you're selling $100,000 deals, your relationship is going to be different with sales than if you're selling $10,000 deals. What you do, the strategies you employ, how you come to agreements with sales is just going to change based off of the size company you're working with. And then I'd go to, what are the metrics your team is accountable for? And how have you done against those targets? So again, asking them point blank, what's going on with their company, what they find to be the most telling metrics. And so I've seen a lot of people with fantastic resumes, and it all breaks down when we get to this question, because they have vanity metrics that they're going after. They're not really able to understand what's going on with their team.
And with this question, are you then looking for some sort of idea of their thought process with regards to like business alignment with like key overall business objectives, right? And like how their performance and what they're driving actually impacts the business and the strategy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I even have a question on here, like a sub question around like, do you have a SLA set up with your sales organization?
And most marketing orgs do not. It's like, all right, I answer that next week.
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know if you can fault people for like, I like writing it down. I like having it on paper because I'm a sucker for those types of like, you know, buy-in, like write it down, sign it, whatever. I've never made anyone sign it, but I think like having it down on paper so you can go back and you can say, look, we both agreed on this, because inevitably people are going to be split on the types of leads that are coming in or whatever. So having that written down is good. How would you build goals for the number of leads next year? I think goal setting is incredibly important, especially for a quantitative function like this.
Yep.
And so understanding what their process is for like going bottoms up to understand what they can do and going top down to understand what they need to accomplish in order to get the company to where it needs to be. Those are the two things to look at. And then what is the goal of marketing and B2B? I think just understanding that. And then how do you approach the technology stack? This is an interesting one and reminds me of who I was as a person 2 years ago. And it still stands true to today, but this is like a huge kind of sticking point for me where I get really tired of marketers who just try to solve everything by buying technology and don't actually implement it well. So it's like trying to buy your way out of the problem. Oh, we can't figure out attribution. Let's go buy another analytics tool and another one and another one. And so those are like, I would be very wary of the person who is really looking to, you know, needs 10 tools in order to get started. I think for the most part, you need a CRM, a marketing automation system, and then slowly start to build on that, but simplify as much as possible.
I think it's very telling, and especially kind of we see it with new people coming into new roles. They're not able to adjust and be flexible, and they're dependent upon a certain tool set. And so then I think you can kind of sense that it may be, and not saying this is concrete, but it may be that they've been using tools as a crutch versus actually having kind of skill sets and understanding of like, being able to build these types of models and like grow demand gen, right? They're like, oh, well, you know, Salesforce has done it for me, or like HubSpot has done all the work for me. And like, I just gave you this report and like we generated demand, right? So I think the process behind it is super important. And like asking the technology stack, seeing what they would want to come in and rip and replace, if anything, or if they're like, hey, I can work with this. Like you said, we have a CRM, we have an automation, we have analytics, we're good to go.
You don't need this is also, always good to see like when they're cutting that budget, but each of these tools, and I think this is a topic for another day, takes time, takes effort. So you look at an analytics implementation, it's going to take time to gather enough data to be able to make use of it. You look at when people are leaving companies every 2 years now. So if they're going to bring in this highly customized technology stack and then leave, they're going to leave you with a pretty big bill. And there will have been a ton of resources that went into building that technology stack. So I'm not sure like that would kind of be where I'd get concerned. So if they are a big technology person, I'd try to understand the resources they require and how they have executed those types of implementations in the past.
And I think the only follow-up question that I would add to this before we kind of wrap would be, there may be like a, like, especially like some of these orgs that are looking to hire this, right? It's, there's a hypothetical. Some of them may have demand gen in place, some of them may not. And so like, just thinking about where they would prioritize in setting one up, like if they've ever set one up from the ground up or not, or if they, you know, taken a plane mid-flight, but like how would you set it up and where would you prioritize in the planning would be kind of another crucial question.
Yeah.
Awesome. What'd you think? Yeah, you get really passionate about demand gen and I love it.
Yeah, no, I love this topic. And let's see. We'll put these questions, and then I also have the answers, and maybe Quincy and I will add some more, but we'll put this in the weekly newsletter so everybody can see them. So make sure to sign up for that. And let's let Quincy play us out from here. All right.
Awesome. Thank you.
Bye.